Welcome to Shooting Spaces, a real estate photography podcast. Discussions on gear, technique, industry news, and interviews with the best in the business. Now, here are your hosts, Rich Baum and Brian Berkowitz.
Hello and welcome to Shooting Spaces. I'm Brian from New York.
And Rich Baum from Sacramento, California.
And thank you all for joining us for another fantastic episode. We have an awesome guest plan, a repeat guest, and one of the top guys out there. But before we get to him, Rich, what's going on? You said you were a little slow this week, but it should pick up again.
Oh, yeah. It's just, I think it's summer and school's out. And, it periodically happens. You get all worried and then all of a sudden you get so busy you can't even think. So, but starting wedding season on Saturday, it's all good.
All right. Nice. Yeah. For me in New York, it hasn't been too bad. It's actually been, I've been keeping pace and, I'm booked out like a week and a half, 2 weeks now. So, I can't complain. It's been busy here. I guess that in between school and camp season hasn't really hit me so bad out here in New York.
Good. But, and your kids are at home anyway, so it's no big deal for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. So who we got today? What's our who's our guest, Brian? I'll let you announce it.
So our guest is a repeat guest. We interviewed him probably, I think, within one of the first episodes we did. He is very well known in the industry and all over Facebook, Mr. Sam Chen. Sam, why don't you say hello and thank you for joining us today, coming back.
Hey now, from cloudy June gloom San Diego.
Yeah, my wife was down there last week in San Diego and looking at colleges with my daughter. And she said it was chilly and gloomy.
And for us natives, we actually welcome it because it's usually so perfect. We like to be humbled a little bit and feel a little bit of Seattle and Pacific Northwest down here. Hey, so what college is she looking at?
Her favorite so far, I think, is, what's it called? It's overlooking the cliff.
Right. UCSD then.
No, not UCSD.
Is it a private school?
No, it's oh my gosh. It'll come to me. But UCSD was her second favorite, just gorgeous.
Oh, and Cliff. Okay. It's probably USD then.
No.
Diego State?
I'm having a brain fart. But right. She wants to go to San Diego because she wants to sunbathe, and my son wants to go ski in Utah, so he's going to Utah. So right. I'm busy. And I got my, you have a nice June gloom. I've got my 107 degree forecasted wedding on Saturday. Oh. So I'm getting prepared for that.
Right.
But, without further ado, Sam, welcome. And I just want to get into, I was thinking, what are we going to talk about? And Brian, I'm sure you got some ideas, but let's just talk about whatever, man. What's new? What's exciting?
Well, I'm coming out of the busiest 3 months of the year historically. And this 2018 was probably the busiest ever. Just booked solid and not complaining, still loving what I'm doing. But I think the lesson here is just you got to anticipate it and then pace yourself and find ways to manage it so you just you don't burn out and fold up. So it's been good, and I'm happy to say that at the end of this big crunch time, I'm still feeling good and I'm not tired of what I'm doing and I'm ready for more. So I think there is a lesson from there to be learned from experience.
And you know what helps me is I go through my calendar from the year before and the year before that, looking at was it the same? And usually it actually has been about the same for me. So, and at the moment, I don't look at it that way. But if I look at it historically, it's usually the same thing. So I'm all cool with it. And it's kind of nice, too.
Yeah, in that way, it's predictable. And I think that's really nice to be able to anticipate it and to track it and to prepare for it. You can't say that about some other industries out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know that, let me go first, Brian, and then you go second.
No problem.
And I'll go third. Sam, I've actually talked to a few people over the last, since our last podcast that we did together a few months ago. And I know that they have a few questions and I remember those questions. Mm-hmm. And one of them, if you'd be so bold and you can just tell me, I can't tell my secrets, but I was just curious. Well, other people are curious. How long does it take you to shoot? I mean, if I look at your photos you post, you're usually doing somewhere around 3,000 to 7,000 square feet, like 5,000 they look like. Is that about right?
I would say the average is between 5 to 10,000, and as much as 25,000. I just did one 25,000.
Oh, does that turn out to be five times more time, 25,000 square foot?
Than- no, because usually, the, you know, with 25 slots in it on the MLS, they usually say, don't shoot the secondary bathrooms and bedrooms. So you can charge five times more, but don't tell them that.
And how long's it taken you to, let's just shoot just your, I'm like, okay, that would be a tremendously huge house for everybody else. So it's hard to really, go apples to apples, but just curious, and let's say a 5,000 square foot house, cause I do 5,000. I don't usually do more than 5 or 7, but how long does it take you to shoot if you were going for 25 photos, let's say?
Yeah, I'll try to keep my answers within reason. 25,000 is a not even a norm for me, so it's silly to talk about extremes. But let's say 5,000. I usually budget about 3 hours on location, and that usually includes aerial photography and also twilight. So I think that's about, I mean, it keeps me busy. I am not resting for 1 minute. So 3 hours of solid nonstop, and that would take care of interior, exterior, twilight, and aerial. And then plenty of time in post. And I think that's what kind of separates me from a lot of other people is that I will take the time in post, and that's because I charge for it. Before I continue, I think I need to qualify everything I say in that, it all depends on your market, and there's no one size fits all solution. So everything I say is what Rich would say is what works for me. And it took years to get to this point where my clientele are very specialized. They're kind of like the echelon of our market, and they will pay for quality. They've kind of gone through the photo factories and the one-stop shops that are cranking out low quality, and they're willing to pay for it. So I will take the time to do it right in post. So to answer your question is about 3 hours with twilight and aerial for 5,000.
Mm-hmm. Now I've got a question. This is strictly doing, because I'm always wrestling with this. I do a lot of twilights, and what I will tend to do is if I'm shooting a house and then I got to do the twilight, I will tend to shoot the house at about 3:30, shoot it for an hour and a half, and then go hit a Starbucks, edit the shoot before that if I need, and then get back to the house at 7:30, 8:30, 9 o'clock for the twilight. How do you how do you fit that in if you're going back to back?
I do the same thing as you, Rich, by the way. Also, is I shoot and take a couple hours and then go back.
Wow, I wish I could do that. I like to maximize my time, and I work off of momentum. So I will purposely schedule a shoot. Let's say 3 hour shoot. I'll go backwards. Sun sets in San Diego at 8 o'clock these days. Summer solstice, by the way. Happy summer solstice. Mm-hmm. I would subtract 3 from 8, and I would start at 5 p.m. And so I would go, and while there's 3 hours of daylight, I would always start with aerial just to get that out of the way, because it's like a different sort of mindset altogether and different gear. So and my drone needs just a little bit more light. It's a Mavic Pro. So I'll get that out of the way. Then I'll do the exterior while it's day. And a lot of times in San Diego, the clouds will kind of roll in around 5 or 6 p.m. So I'll get that out of the way just in case the clouds come in. And I do a lot of coastal homes, and clouds like to come in. And then once I get that out of the way, I'll focus on interior until the sun starts to set. And then, we have sort of a 10-minute period where after the sun disappears, we have 10 minutes to finish up and then go out there and do the final twilight. So I maximize my time completely. And I actually prefer to shoot late because, I can set the shutter speeds to be a little bit slower. I can, use less flash power. I shoot with one single AD200, and that's it. That's the only light I ever use, one at a time, just light painting. But there's a lot of advantages in shooting later. The shadows are a little bit less harsh, and it's easier to do post-production when it's just a little bit more mellow. And all the colors are there. And what's great about Lightroom and Photoshop is that, if the colors are there, you can just enhance it a little bit and they'll pop out, even though it's not evident in the back of the camera or on the Cam Ranger, you know, the colors are there. And so I think there's just a lot of benefits in shooting it a bit later.
And my last question will be, are you ever able to include one more thing? Are you ever able to include the house interior and then interior twilight and exterior twilight? Because I know some people do that, like Chris Miller. I have no idea how they fit that in, especially with, you know me, I do a lot of exterior shots. But do you do that also?
Yes, I totally do. In fact, I love shooting interiors when the sun has gone down and you don't have to do window pulls. If the light, if the house is modern and has good even distribution of sort of like ceiling can lights, guess what? It's, you got coverage. Everything is even. It's got the same color temperature, and you can bracket. You don't even. I just shot this brand new construction in Rancho Santa Fe. It's a gigantic, great room. I'll share these pictures soon. And it's like this gigantic room, and it's like a gymnasium practically, but that's their living room. That's their dining room. That's your kitchen. And it's really evenly distributed with can lights. And all I'd had to do was do three brackets and I was done. And that was the shot that the stager picked out of all of them for their advertisement, you know. And yes, I have to follow up on this little story that I posted recently. They did offer to pay for staging a commercial photo, which is shocking. The stager is offered to pay for usage of the picture.
Oh, nice. It does happen.
Yes. Yes, we have one success story.
But one thing, and I'll let you go to Brian, it's really the houses that you're shooting, I find they spend a lot of money on lighting. So that really helps, especially you probably have dimmers on every light, and that's huge too. So, you know, you've got to, it's not always apples to apples, and shooting a huge house like that might be easier in some ways. So, you know, not always, but some ways.
Yeah. Yes and no. That what you said is absolutely true, but also I've shot a lot of huge homes that are just old and moldy, you know, in Rancho Santa Fe. They're just, you know, kind of forgotten, and everything is different color temperatures, and they love using old tungsten yellow lights, and they clash. You know, maybe the grandson buys them a new LED light, they put it in there, and it's just a fiasco. The point is that as a photographer, you got to be ready for anything, you know, and because I'm so post heavy, I walk in with confidence. I see something that doesn't work, I'm like, okay, I'll fix it in post. And I have no problem with delaying things in post and not having to get it in camera. And that's where I think I'm kind of different than a lot of purists, where, you know, like Scott Hargis, he preaches using speed lights and trying to get everything in camera. And that's why I started with Hargis and I loved what he taught. But then it was really Mike Kelly's workflow that I gravitated towards because of my background in visual effects and computer animation. I think post is not a four-letter F word. It's not evil. Post is perfectly, it's just a tool. And if you can use it to your advantage, there's nothing shameful about doing things in post. Yeah. Even Ansel Adams spent half his time in post, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you, Sam, but what I found, and you know, I know Photoshop really well. I spent a couple years working as a retoucher in New York City. So, and I used to be Adobe certified. So, you know, I'm fairly proficient in Photoshop, but I kind of still do have that attitude where I go into a house and I say, oh, I'll just fix it in post. But what I found was I was overusing that mentality and getting a little lazy on my shoots. And it ended up turning into more unnecessary work in post for me, where, you know, I finished composing, I finished lighting, I was about to take the shot, and I saw something like on a wall that maybe I wanted to move, or a plug that I wanted to pull out of the outlet. I'm like, I'll just take it out in post. And stupid things like that, where if I would have walked over 5 feet and pulled the plug out and just hit it behind the couch, I would have saved me, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes in post, where it would have taken me 15 seconds to go pull it out of the wall. But so I find myself falling into that lazy shooter mentality when I say, oh, I'll just fix it in post. I don't know if... Mm-hmm.
Well, sure. I mean, there's always a happy medium, and you can't go from one extreme to the other. When it comes to physical things like that, it's much, much easier to move it in real life than cloning. Cloning is one of the most time-consuming things. Half of Mike Kelly's WAMA videos is him, you know, pen-tooling these masks and cloning things out. I agree with that. But what I'm talking about when it comes to poses, like to color temperature, I used to use CTO gels, and I just say, screw that. That it's such an easy fix in post. So stuff like color temperatures and even boosting light, even fill light, you can get away with murder when you shoot in RAW and you've got, you know, localized tools like the brush, adjustment tool brush, you got the radial filter, graduated filter. You could get away with so much. And those are the kind of the things that I do in post rather than futz with dimmers, futz with, you know, different lights and stuff.
Sure. And in that sense, I agree with you. Yeah, in that sense, I agree with you, because when I'm on a shoot, I don't really worry too much about color cast and stuff like that, because, mm-hmm. you know, if I have a yellow color cast on the wall in under 5 seconds, I can pull it out.
Yep.
Whereas that would take me, you know, 10 minutes to readjust my lights or whatever it is to get rid of the color cast. So
yeah, and that's the kind of decisions you got to pick, is what is easy to do in person. And it's usually moving a physical ottoman or some a hamper or something like that.
Cool. I have a question for you regarding something you said when we first started talking to you a couple minutes ago, and you were talking about how, you know, the last 3 months have been the busiest 3 months you've had, I think, in your history, you said.
Yes.
You know, and I'm in a similar boat. I've had since the end of April for me has been nonstop, and I was probably mid-May when I was, you know, 5 weeks into my busy season, I got burned out. I was working till 2-3 a.m. and getting up at 7 a.m. for shoots. And I decided I had to start outsourcing my editing, because I can't do this through the end of August, which is kind of the busy season here, August, September. So what kind of things do you do? Because I know you do a lot of all your own editing. What kind of things do you do to anticipate that workflow and make sure you're prepared that when that influx comes in, you're, you know, I guess you kind of have a system that you're able to, you know, shoot during the day, come home or to your office, wherever you work, you know, churn them out and be ready to go the next day with a brand new set of jobs.
Actually, I hinted at this at the last podcast, is that I have started outsourcing.
Oh, okay.
So for selected properties, I will outsource. For the critical ones, I still will do it by hand.
Sure.
So,
I mean, I do the same thing. I don't outsource everything. Yeah. It depends on the project itself.
Yeah, I think the important thing is to, believe it or not, learning how to say no. I've actually turned away quite a few jobs where I felt like, you know, I've recently gone exclusively luxury, and I have the luxury of doing only luxury because it's sort of gotten to the point where I can be selective. But, you know, it takes years to get to that point. But now I actually say no to some of the lower end jobs, and I only take on the higher end jobs. So you got to kind of pace yourself. I try not to do more than one a day, believe it or not, because I have to think about editing. But during the height of crunch time, I was doing 3 shoots a day, and that's a lot for me because each one is very demanding. And so by the time you get home, you don't even want to edit 3 of them, you know. So I've learned to just say no, try to save one day a week with nothing. Literally, you're doing customer support, you're doing editing, you're farming out stuff to outsource. You know, it does take time, believe it or not, to cull the photos you need to be edited and then send it, you know, manage the whole process. And those of you who have done outsourcing, it usually comes back unsatisfactory, and you got to kind of, you know, send it right back and slap them on the wrist and tell them that they need directions. There's a lot of work you got to sort of be prepared for that, you know, could easily pile up if you're not anticipating. And these are like nothing to do with editing or shooting. These are just administrative stuff and customer service stuff. So I would say, you know, I shoot 4 out of 5 days a week, if possible. I don't shoot on weekends. I've been asked many times, but you got to kind of draw the line somewhere so you don't burn out. And so, yeah, if you have to say no to a couple of clients, oh well, you know, you have your sanity, but you lost a few $1,000s, big deal.
And Sam, for a friend of mine, my buddy Martin Beebe here in Sacramento, he wanted to know, Do you outsource? He says he heard somewhere that you do outsource, and he found it would be very strange how your workflow could be done by somebody else. Where are you at with outsourcing?
Yeah, I mean, that's a totally fair question. And I think it's just a matter of finding the right fit. I've been through a few companies. I've had them do tests, and half of them came back horribly, and the other half were good. And then you do a few jobs, they do a bait and switch on you, and all of a sudden it's crappy again. Mm-hmm. And then you slap them on the wrist and say, hey, this was edited by you guys, probably by the A team, and now I got the Z team. And you call them on it, and they're all very polite. They're all very good, usually. And you kind of have to train them. And I found out this is like my number one tip for people who outsource. Number one, you got to sort of give them good ingredient. It's almost like cooking. You got to give them good, fresh material to cook with. And one of them, which is that when you give them flash layers, don't give them like enough rope that they can hang themselves. You know, it's kind of that analogy. Give them enough so they can do their job. But if you give them this sort of a frontal, you know, camera, light next to the camera, flash from the front, everything is lit evenly, guess what? They're going to use it. And you got this very flat looking frontal lighting on axis flash layer that's just going to ruin everything. So you take out that one flash layer and you got all these side lit flash coming from directions and stuff. You got the ambient, a good ambient. And guess what? That's all they have. They're not going to hang themselves with that frontal flash layer. And so you got to learn, you know, what to give them, because if you give them too much, they're going to hang themselves.
But do you outsource, or now you're back to doing it all yourself?
Well, when things slow down, I try to do everything myself. And I need a sort of add on to that statement, in that everything that comes back to me, and this is true for a lot of people who outsource, it comes back about 70% done. I have to do the last 30%, which is to give it sort of that look that my clients hiring me for. And so whether it's like a, as you say it, Rich, the secret sauce or the little bump, you know, you hit that.
I didn't make it up. I didn't invent it.
Let me guess, Wayne Capelli, right?
No, I don't know where it came from, but it came from that other F word.
Yeah, we won't say it. But, you're talking about flatulence?
No, I have. I'm getting old and have flatulence. Yeah. Okay.
But you really have to give it that final polish that makes an image your own. Yeah. And I'll make it look less flat, less bright, less kind of, I don't know, just very generic looking. I'll add some shadows. I'll increase the contrast. I'll add vignetting and local radial filters just to make it a little bit more imperfect.
No, I agree with you. And I do the same thing, because I started outsourcing a good portion of my jobs, not the higher end stuff, but almost everything else. And when I get everything back, I do have to go in, and I'm not spending as much time as I would if I edited, but I'm spending a good 15, 20 minutes just you know, polishing it off, fixing it up, as you said, just, you know, adjusting contrast, you know, some shadows, you know, and even like just file renaming an organization once I get the new files, that's part of it too. So I rename all my files and, you know, put a little vignette. And so there is, like you said, there is some work involved for sure, even when you outsource. So don't be expected to get your images back, send them off to the client, and everybody's happy and jolly. Because, you know, I have one of my highest end builders that I outsourced my first job for, I guess it was about a month ago, and she was really dissatisfied. And it was a big to do. And I said, okay, I'm shooting for her tomorrow, actually. And I said, okay, like I have to personally go in and edit all her jobs from now on. I can't outsource her anymore. But it is what it is. I can't lose the client. And I just raised my prices to that client also right before this one shoot, and she got it back. I raised my prices and outsourced it. And I guess the whole combination of everything, she was like, so I'm paying more for inferior quality. And it all came together. So, you know, tomorrow I'm shooting for her, and I'm going to just go back in and do it all myself and make sure everything is dead on. So.
Yeah, but you nailed it on the. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I look at everything half full. The cup is half full because it saved you from hours and hours of doing it yourself. You have time with your kids, your family, binge watch some TV, and it's totally worth, you know, adding 15 minutes, 20 minutes to look over everything before it goes out the door. So I think it's a totally great trade-off.
And Sam, another question from somebody, very pertinent, very important. Mm-hmm. How is your black kitty?
She's great. Her name is Boo, and she was a rescue cat from Humane Society.
Boo,
B-O-O, yeah. She's the pride and, you know, pride and joy of our lives. She found us. You know, this sounds kind of corny, but we looked at no less than 50 to 100 kittens, and she found us. She just, you know, talked to us, and she was 10 weeks old, and we've had her for about 6 years now, and she's great.
Awesome. Can I ask you one final question? I know, Rich, you got to run to a shoot, so this will be it for me. We mentioned, you talked about aerials and doing that at the beginning of all your shoots. As you know, I'm also a Part 107 pilot, mm-hmm. and I would say at this point, maybe 40 to 50% of my shoots include drones, so it's definitely growing. Is that something that you include in all your shoots, or is that just an added service that people pay for? Are you just getting, you know, putting your name out there as the guy that shoots photo and drone, and that's part of my thing? When you hire me, you get both, or, you know, how does it work?
Right. Yeah, it's funny you ask, because about 4.5 to 5 years ago, that was my way into this very exclusive boys club. I was new to real estate photography. I had zero training, zero contact, no one to mentor me. And one day I said, you know what? Because I've been flying drones since Phantom 1 came out, and I bought it. I was the only one flying, you know, in my zip code at least. And one day I saw that a Sotheby's agent was interested in aerial, but no one was offering that. So I literally marched in his office and I said, you need me. He's like, why? Oh, I do aerial. And here are some pictures I've shot around town, you know, for tourism and just pretty pictures. And he was pretty curious and I think slightly impressed. So he gave me a chance, and that was 5 years ago. And so aerial has always been sort of my calling card from day one, even before interior and regular photography. And long story short, we kind of rose up through the ranks together. And long story short, like I said, he is currently the number one agent in San Diego, like by gross. He just, I think, jumped from fifth place to first this year. And he uses me exclusively. So I like to think that I had a little bit to do with that. And a big part of his shoots include aerial, because they're all mostly coastal properties that include the ocean and sunsets and all that. And I posted it probably a few months ago, but he set the record for the highest price home sold in San Diego in the last 10 years. So wow. That was all shot with lots of aerial coverage.
That was all you.
25,000 yeah. square feet?
No, this one was probably only 6,000 or 7,000.
Did you get a percentage off that?
Hell no. I know. I demand we start a union or something. We need to start picketing and boycotting.
And what's 25,000 square foot go for these days in your neighborhood?
It's $25 million. You can actually look it up on MLS. It's probably one of the most expensive homes available in San Diego currently. And in fact, President Bill Clinton stayed there when he visited San Diego as a president back then.
What was the price? I didn't hear you.
$25
million. Okay. Nice.
$25 million, 25,000 yep. square feet?
Easy.
Yeah. Nice.
I shot an 80 million last week.
Wow.
Yeah, but it was 40 acres, so it was really the property that was that was the value of the house more so than the actual house.
I'll just go and do my 2,000 square foot house. Okay.
Hey, I went from that to a 1,200 square foot house. So it's just the nature of our business.
I would like to add one last thing to this whole aerial discussion is I find it very disconcerting as someone with Part 107 license and trying very hard to follow the law. I see so many people who are disregarding airspace restrictions, and I've turned down so many jobs, or jobs have turned me down because someone else will do it without getting permission. And these are peers, these are professionals. So I don't know if you guys could relate or you see that in your market.
I mean, I can definitely relate. I personally live 3 miles from JFK Airport. The landing path is literally right over my home, and I hear the planes all day and all night. But besides for that, I can't fly in my town. That's against the law. And you know, any of my clients that are, you know, within the five or six towns around my area who call me, I say, I can't do it. And like you said, that's just, it's, they go and they find someone that's willing to do it. And it's so dangerous because the planes are, I'm 3 miles from the airport. The planes are literally 200 feet over my house, 300 feet. It's not, you know, that's the max altitude I can fly is 400. Yeah. I'm within that area where the planes are.
I thought software was not allowing people to fly in restricted areas.
Well, you know, what's funny is that home that I was shooting, the 25,000 square foot home, that place is so big that half of it is within a DJI geofence. The other half isn't. So the guy that was flying, he flew up and all of a sudden he hit this Star Wars Death Star force field. And it's like, oh my God, I can't go anymore. It's like, it's hilarious. I couldn't believe my eyes. So he just kind of flew on the other side of the geofence. And so I found out that the geofence doesn't really follow that 5 mile or the airspace class. I don't know how they set geofences, but that, I thought that was fascinating.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, we'll see how the future goes. Yeah, I got to go work, guys, and get ready for my shoot and my weekend and everything. But I want to thank you, Sam, so much for coming on again. I hope we can maybe make this not a regular thing, but come on again, because I promise you, there's two people that everybody love to hear from, and you and Wayne are just welcome anytime, and so much fun to shoot the breeze with you. So thank you so much from the bottom of my heart.
Ah, thank you. And we haven't even talked about the 17 millimeter tilt shift yet.
Okay. I switch camps and now I'm Sony and Canon tilt shift. So that's,
yeah, we have much to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, maybe, you know, Rich and I are trying to push the Facebook Lives a lot. So maybe we can go on a Facebook Live in the next, couple of days.
It would get Wayne to come on. We have Wayne Sam Chen. That'd be great, man. Would you like that? Sam, would you join us?
Well, I think you're finally outing us. We're actually the same person.
Yeah. Well, most of the people think you're a cat, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Hey, I gotta go, but hey, Sam, again, thank you so much. And your work speaks for itself, and you're the top of the top. So you're welcome on the show anytime you want. So
thank you, Rich. Again. My pleasure.
All right, Sam. Have a good one. Thanks again.
Hey, Brian, yeah.
And Rich.
You too. And until the next time.
Yeah, get your twilight on, and we'll be speaking next week.
Everybody out there in podcast land, have a great day. Subscribe to our podcast. And remember, Ask the Guys feature where you can record your own 90-second question. And we're going to be getting pros on that maybe even Sam Chen will answer the next one. So have your question out there and we'll get to it, and subscribe. And a lot of big things coming up the end of this year and next year. So stick around for Shooting Spaces.
Well said. Have a good one.
Talk to you later, guys.
This has been Shooting Spaces, a real estate photography podcast. Subscribe to the show and don't forget to leave us a review. You can also follow Rich and Brian on social media and at their website, shootingspacespodcast.com.